Maybe we'll run through the dinim of the wedding ceremony first, and then we'll run through the minhagim. When you have a wedding ceremony, it is necessary to have a Masada Kiddushin. The later Amoraim made a takana that when it comes to a wedding, it comes chalila to a divorce. Someone knowledgeable in this area of halacha has to be in charge and has to supervise. Rashi in his commentary on the Gemara, in the days of the early Amoraim, there was no such takana. And the Gemara in fact says, what do you think? Everybody who gets divorced in the presence of a big Talmid Chacham who's supervising everything. But in the days of the later Amoraim, they made such a takana that Mishenei Adeh B'tiv Git Nekidushin Lo Yehei Lo Yisikim Moim. Rashi writes in his commentary on the Gemara that we need a rabbi who's functioning like a Dayan or like a Bezdin. And because Rashi writes that it's like a Dayan or like a Bezdin, that's why some of the later Poskim say that a Bezdin cannot be convened at night. So the proper practice should be that the Siddur Kiddushin, the wedding ceremony, should take place in the daytime, or a Siddur Aget. A get should be given in the daytime. Also, because Kroivim are puzzled to serve as Dayanim, so the Masadah HaGet should not be related to the husband or the wife, and Masadah Kiddushin should not be a relative either. The Knesset HaGdoila was a rabbi in Constantinople, and he writes, when he came to the city, he found this strange practice that people had chuppas at night. He never heard of that before. In the Shulchan Aruch, they only quote half of this story, that the Siddur HaGet should take place in the daytime and the Masadah HaGet should not be related to the husband or the wife. They didn't quote the whole passage from the Rishonim. They left out the other half, that by Kiddushin it should also take place in the daytime, should not be done by Kroivim. So this the author of the Knesset HaGdoila writes that he impressed upon the Balabatim that they're doing wrong, and he reinstated the old practice that all the chuppah should take place in the daytime. Today we know many people don't get married in the daytime. So if I got married in the winter time, so in the middle of the week on a Tuesday night, so we didn't get married in the daytime. So we're makel on that. But if it's a long day, getting married in the summertime, if it's a long day, so more correct is you should get married in the daytime before the Shkia, and the Masada Kiddushin should not be related. I remember when my son Yami got engaged. So we were negotiating with the Mechutanim when the wedding is going to be and who's going to be Masada Kiddushin. So they only wanted that I should be Masada Kiddushin. So I said, I'm a relative. It's better not to have a relative. And I explained, if the chuppah is at night anyway, so you don't have a bezin anyway, you don't have a bezin balayla, so then it doesn't make a difference. You can have relatives. But if the chuppah is going to be in the daytime, so more correct is you shouldn't have relatives. Be Masada Kiddushin. So the Mechutanim said, so let's have the chuppah at night. So we didn't have the chuppah. We had the chuppah in the daytime. So the deal was that we had all the rabbanim sit in the front row, and I said they're all going to supervise. All the rabbanim. He got married in Toronto. All the rabbanim will be reciting kedusha, and I'll recite the bracha representing all of the rabbanim. The wedding ceremony consists of two parts. You have the first part is erisin, that's kedushin, and the second part is the nisuin, that's the chuppah. In the days of the Tanakh, in the days of the Talmud, there would be a long pause in between the Erisin and the Nisun. There would be a year or a half a year, quite a while in between. And a separate bracha was recited in connection with the Erisin. And then 6 months later, a year later, a separate series of seven brachas, the seven brachas, would be recited under the chuppah when they did the Nisun. In the days of the Gonim, they decided to move them up next to each other. It's not safe to have a girl who's an Eshesish. She's married and she's not living with her husband. So they said, it's not a smart idea. So we have Nisuin following immediately right after Erisin, with hardly any pause in between. What is the nature of the bracha that we recite in connection with the Erisin? So it starts off Hashem Kedushana b'mitzvaysov, but it doesn't end off so simply with Tzivanu l'kadesh ha'isha. It starts off sounding like a birchas hamitzvah, but it doesn't end off like that. So that's a big dispute. The Rambam's opinion is that there's a separate mitzvah to get married and a separate mitzvah to have children, two different mitzvahs in the listing of the 613 mitzvahs. And the Rambam's opinion is that the bracha that's recited, supposed to be recited by the chosen, he's performing the mitzvah of getting married, he should recite the bracha, like you say the bracha right before you put on the tefillin, right before you put on the talis. So too, you should recite the bracha right before, the chosen should recite the bracha right before he's about to give the ring to the kala. And Taisa's opinion is that there is no such mitzvah as getting married. There's a mitzvah to see to it that you have children. Try to have children. You can't have children unless you're going to get married. That's like building a sukkah. That's like buying a lulav. If you don't buy a lulav, you won't have a lulav to shake on sukkahs, but you don't recite a bracha when you buy the lulav. That's what we call a heksher mitzvah, ha'achana, preparation to performance of the mitzvah. And no bracha, no birchas ha-mitzvah should be recited. So how come we do recite a bracha? So Taisa's opinion is that it's a birchas ha-shevach. We're praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he gave us the institution of marriage. And by us, the institution of marriage is different from the other nations of the world. Everybody has an institution of marriage, but it's very different. And ours carries with it different halachas. So according to Taisa's opinion, it's considered a birchas ha-shevach. We're praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And a birchas ha-shevach is always recited after you experience the thing. After you see the lightning, and after you heard the thunder, and after you see the Grand Canyon, and after you see the ocean, and so on. After you experience it, then you say the brachas. According to Taisus, the bracha should really be recited. More correct is that the bracha should be recited after the chassan gives the ring. Our practice is that we want to satisfy the Rambam's opinion, because the Rambam says that if the chassan didn't say the bracha before he gave the ring, it's already too late, mashanasek manase fafalm, and you don't say a bracha at all. So according to Taisvis, more correct would be to recite the bracha after you give the ring. But according to Taisvis, we say the bracha before, it's not so bad. So we want to try to satisfy both opinions, so we say the bracha in advance of giving over the ring. Strictly speaking, though, we really follow Taisvis' opinion. We're trying to satisfy the Rambam, so we say the bracha before the chassan gives the ring. But we really don't paskin like the Rambam. In Europe, the Rabbonim used to be Masada Kiddushin for communists who didn't believe in Hashem, Alakeinu, Kitshanu, Vitzivanu, and they nonetheless said the bracha. So if it's a birchas ha-mitzvah on behalf of the chassan kala who are performing the mitzvah, they don't believe in the whole religion. So what are we saying? A bracha levatola to be mitzi them. So one of the Sfarim in Europe quotes Rabbi Simcha Zelig Rieger, was a dayan, that was Dr. Rieger's father, Dr. Rieger who taught Tanakh in Yeshiva College. His father was the dayan in Brisk under Rab Chaim. Rab Chaim handpicked him. He had learned in Volozhin. And so this is what he pointed out, that we really follow Shita Sataisvis, that the bracha that's recited in connection with the Eris and the Birchas Eris, and it's not really a Birchas HaMitzvah, it belongs to the Chassan, it's a bracha because the marriage is taking effect. It's a bracha that all of the people have to recite. Someone in the crowd has to recite the bracha, and it's not really in order to be mitzi the chassan. That's the question. Why do we have the practice that the rabbi says, who's supposed to say the bracha? The rabbi's supposed to say the bracha. So according to the Rambam's opinion, the bracha should be recited by the chassan. So why does the rabbi say the bracha? So they quote in Shulchan Aruch from the early Rishonim that the reason why is because it's the first time in his life that he's getting married. By most today is not so, but mostly in the Yizgot, the only time in his lifetime, once in a lifetime he's going to say the bracha. He's only going to get married once to a customer. He's going to get married once in his lifetime, and he may make a mistake under the chuppah. He may fumble, he may mispronounce the words, and everybody's going to laugh at the chassan that he can't say Yivra. So in order k'deish lo levayesh is misha any adeh, in order not to embarrass the chassan who doesn't know how to say the bracha, he's going to get nervous, he's going to make a mistake. So that's why they instituted that we have a rabbi recite the bracha on behalf of the chassan. Yeah, but truth of the matter is that we really don't follow that opinion. We hold that even if the chassan is an apikoris and he doesn't believe in mitzvahs at all, we assume that it's really the crowd has to recite this bracha. This is a birchas ha-shevach that was introduced in connection with a wedding. Someone from the crowd should recite the bracha. There's a humorous discussion in the Tshuvas by Rabbi Breisch, Zechar Lebracha from Switzerland, Chelkas Yaakov, I think, the name of the Tshuvas. So the first volume was printed before the war, the other volumes were after the war. So he has in his first volume, who has the right to choose the Masada Kiddushin? So a lot of times there's a machlaikis, the boy wants his Rosh Yeshiva, the girl wants her Rosh Yeshiva. So who has the right to pick the Masada Kiddushin? So he has an interesting, humorous, entertaining discussion. So he says, if it's a birchas ha-mitzvah and the chassan is performing the mitzvah, so the chassan should really have the right to pick who's saying the bracha for him. Then he quotes the Nevi Yehuda, says that maybe even though the kala is not mechuyev to get married, kala is not mechuyev to have children, but if she's agreeing to get married, so she's also fulfilling the mitzvah. So maybe the bracha belongs to both of them. That's a discussion that the Nevi Yehuda has. What if the chassan is deaf? So the Masada Kedushin, if he's saying the bracha on behalf of the chosn isn't yotzei anything, he can't hear. So he says maybe the bracha relates both to the chosn and to the kal. Unfortunately, sometimes you have a chosn, both the chosn and the kal are both deaf. So that's the question. So if the bracha belongs to the chosn, or the chosn and the kal are both deaf, so the rabbi can't say a bracha to be mitzi them. There's no shamei kaina. So in the Ikar Adin, we pass on that it's not a bracha that belongs to the chosn or the kal. It's really a bichas hashevach, it's not a bichas hamitzvah. And someone from the whole group should recite the bracha. So that's what the Chelkas Yaakov points out. Sometimes the chosn learned in this yeshiva and he's crazy about his Rosh Yeshiva. He thinks his Rosh Yeshiva, he wants his Rosh Yeshiva to say the bracha. Kala learned in some other school, she wants her rabbi to say. And if you would ask the guests who are attending the wedding, they never heard of his Rosh Yeshiva, they never heard of her Rosh Yeshiva. They want the local Orthodox rabbi, whom they all respect. They're both from the same neighborhood. So a lot of times that's a serious consideration. It's not right. Strictly speaking, we really paskin that the bracha doesn't belong to the chasan or to the kala. Bottom line, we paskin it's a bracha that should be recited by somebody representing the whole group who is present. So you should really pick the rabbi whom take an unofficial poll. Whom would they choose? The local Orthodox rabbi they would choose. They wouldn't want his Rosh Yeshiva, they wouldn't want her rabbi. They never heard of either of them. This consideration of Kedesha lo levayesh is meishe en yodeh, according to the Rambam's opinion, the bracha should really be recited by the chosn, but we don't want him to make a mistake under the chuppah. So even if he's a learned individual, even if he knows the bracha by heart, we make a loy plug. So we don't allow the chosn, we never have the chosn say his own bracha, we have someone else say for him. So this was the practice by many rabbonim. Many of you will remember Rav Soloveitchik would be Masada Kiddushin a lot of times. So many rabbonim will tell the chosn, say hariyat. So he says hariyat mekudesh lini, gives the ring. And if the chosn doesn't know how to say hariyat, so you say with him, say harei, harei, atat, and so on. So Rav Soloveitchik had the practice like many European rabbonim had. Even if it would be at my wedding, even if it would be a person who knows what you're supposed to say, he would say word for word. Harei, harei, at, mekudeshes, mekudeshes, kedesha lo levayshis, misheni adeya. They didn't want to embarrass the one who doesn't know how to say hariyat, so they would say with everybody. A lot of the old European rabbonim, if they're going to say harei, harei, at, mekudeshes, mekudeshes, li, so it sounds like the rabbi is marrying the girl. So a lot of them had the practice, it would say li. So a lot of times the chosn would say li. Rav Soloveitchik did not have that. He would say li. He wouldn't say li. He would say word for word. That's the consideration. Kadesha lolavayesh is misheni adir. You have to have the consent. You have to have the consent of both the chosn and the kala. The chosn can't marry the girl against her wishes. She has to agree. So how come we only have the chosn say harayat mekudeshes li? Why doesn't the kala say something also? So the Gemara says, we assume that when the girl is quiet, she shows sekes, so the shtika is a haskama. It indicates that she's in agreement to marry the boy. That's why we have a problem with the pasuk in Navi that says, the day will come, od yishama be'or yehudim chutz yivshalayim, kol chosim v'kol kala. The kala is not going to say anything. What do you mean? We're going to hear the kol akala. So the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Balatanya, has a drasha about this in the Likutei Torah, and he says, no, the Chosn Kala is not talking about a boy and a girl getting married. It's talking about the renewing of the marriage oath that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made with the Jewish people when he left Eretz Mitzrayim. So he said, when he said Harayat, so he said, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. That was the marriage oath. And Lossi Lov is going to say, Anochi Anochi Hu Menachemcha. Medrash says that Anochi Anochi is going to be double Anochi Hashem Elokecha because the Rebbeinu Shlom ba'abled us. He caused us to suffer so much during the years of the Golus. So Lossi Lov, the Malachim convinced him. Lossi Lov is going to take us back again. He's going to say a double ksuba, Anochi Anochi Hu Menachemchem. And just like the original time, we had to scream out Nasa ben Ishma. So Lossi Lov is going to be called Kala also. We're going to be, he's the Chosin, we're going to be the Kala. We're going to say Nasa ben Ishma again. We're going to say something the second time. So that's the called Kala. But under the chuppah, it's not necessary to consult the kala. We assume that the fact that she shosekes, that itself is an indication that she's in agreement to get married. There used to be a mistake in the old madrich. They used to have a little book that the rabbis would use as a guide, how to perform a marriage, and how to speak at the occasion of a funeral or an unveiling or whatever. So in the old Madrich, somebody showed me there's a mistake. It says the chosen gives the ring to the kala, and then he says Hari Amukudeshesli. So this is not the way it's described in the Gemara. The Gemara says he should first say Hari Amukudeshesli, and then give the ring. If first you give the ring and then you say Hari Amukudeshesli, the Gemara calls that Shtika Lachamat Mois. So the Gemara is not sure whether a Shtika Lachamat Mois is to be taken as a consent, as consent on the part of the girl. Today they send out wedding invitations. The girl marched down the aisle with the gals. Obviously she's agreeing to marry him. So today it's not really a shaila. The Gemara is talking about a case. A boy takes a girl out on a date and he gives her a gift, and after he gives her the gift, he says, after she takes it, then he says, Hariyat Mukudashasli. So the Gemara is Masupik whether her shtika, after he gave her the gift, cannot be taken as an indication that she agrees to marry him. Otherwise she should have given back the gift. Or no, he gave her the gift already. She doesn't feel compelled to say, I don't want to marry you. But today that you send out invitations, so the, strictly speaking, the Madrich is really right. It does make a difference one way or the other. But still, the minig is that we do like it's described in the Gemara. The first, the chosen should say, Hariyat Mukudeshesli, and then he should give the kesef. Strictly speaking, you don't have to get married dafke with kesef. You can get married with hishtar. You can write a document which says, Hariyat Mukudeshesli. But the Rambam writes that there's a major difference between Kiddushei Kesef and Kiddushei Shtar. That Kiddushei Kesef is Torah Shebal Peh only, derived from Gzeira Shoveh, from Zdei Ephron. And Kiddushei Shtar is practically explicit in the Chumash, that's considered Torah Shebichsav. And in Eretz Yisrael, are blessed now with all of the Karaim from Arba Kamfas Ha'aretz, from all over the world. They have different groups of Karaim, Karaites, from Europe, or from Asia, and from Africa. Each group has different shtick. So one of the things they share in common is none of them have Kiddushei Kesef, because Kiddushei Kesef is Torah Shebal Peh. So the Rambam writes, the Rambam lived in Egypt and he was fighting a lot against the Karoim. So the Rambam writes, the practice by the Orthodox Jews is that we do Kiddushei Kesef to demonstrate under the chuppah that we subscribe to the Torah Shebal Peh. We have a lot of practices like that where we choose to do things in a certain way to demonstrate that we subscribe to the Torah Shebal Peh. In the days of the Gemara, they clearly did not recite the Birchas Harisen over a cup of wine. Let's say you say the bracha lahaniach tefillin. You don't say bar piagof and then lahaniach tefillin. Put on a talis. You don't say bar piagof and the sata bitzitzes. When you bench licht, you don't say a bracha bar piagof. Some brachas you recite over a cup of wine and others not. So in the days of the Gemara, it's clear that the Birchas Harisen was not recited over a cup of wine. This was introduced in the days of the Gaonim. So strictly speaking, it's not really a bracha al hakos. So that's why the Pnei Yeshua, in his commentary, Pnei Yeshua lived in the 1700s, so in his commentary on the Gemara Ksubas, he raises that issue. The Gemara says, if I'm saying Kiddush for someone else, a Havdalah for someone else, I don't have to drink the wine at all. Even though if someone does not have to say Hamoitzi, I can't say Hamoitzi for him, unless we're both eating bread. If we're both sitting down at a table, we're both eating bread, they're both drinking wine, so I can say Bar Piagofen, or I can say Hamoitzi on behalf of myself and on behalf of the other person. But if I'm not eating, I'm not drinking wine, and I'm only going to say the bracha for someone else, then it's a bracha levatol, it doesn't work. So by Kiddush, the Gemara says it does work. Hamoitzi of alachilas matzah, I can say on behalf of someone else, even though I already finished the whole Seder. And bar piagofen of Kiddush, I can say for someone else, because it's part of the Kiddush, it's part of the Seder. So the Pnei Yeshua raises this question, how do we allow this bizman hazeh? The rabbi under the chuppah says bar piagof, and he doesn't drink the wine at all. He only gives it to the chassan. So if it would have been midin ha-gemara, that was kach tikno chachomim, that like Kiddush and Abdal has to be over a cup of wine, it's a different story. So the bar piagof can be recited on behalf of the other person also. But this was only instituted in the days of the Gaonim. So what right do we have to say bar piagof on behalf of the chassan kal, and we don't, and the rabbi doesn't drink the wine? So this is the kasha that the Pnei Yeshua points out in the Kuntri Sachran on the first perek in Ksubis. In one of the svarim that was written before the Second World War, the Sefer Afike Yam, the Sefer was written by a businessman. They had a style and they had Goinim Adirim, who knew all of Shas like Menachem Zemel, was a businessman. He was one of the biggest guys in Poland. He was killed by the Nazis. So there were a group of Goinim Adirim. They knew everything. They knew everything and they were in business. They weren't Rabbanim. So the one who wrote the Afike Yam originally was in business, and then later in life he went into the rabbinate. So he quotes all the other Goinim in his Sefer. So he quotes that Rab Simcha Zelig, the Dayan Brisk, told him that he never noticed this, but Rab Chaim Soloveitchik mentioned to him that he's bothered with this kasha of the Pnei Yeshua. How can you say Bor Piagofen on behalf of the Chosen Kal and the rabbi doesn't drink? Rab Chaim Soloveitchik told his Dayan. Simcha Chazal always used to watch Rab Chaim like a hawk. He wanted to watch everything to see everything that he did and try to pay attention to everything that he said. So this he never noticed on his own, even though he attended many weddings. Rab Chaim mentioned to him that he's always careful to tilt the cup of wine a little bit, to spill a little wine on his finger, and then when he gives the wine to the Chosen Kal, he always will lick some of the wine on his own in a fashion that nobody should notice, because the minig is that the rabbi does not drink the wine. So he doesn't want to violate the minig, but he thought the Pnei Yeshua's kasha was a strong kasha, so he took a lick of the wine in an inconspicuous fashion. Today you'll see rabbis under the chuppah, I saw more than once, that they'll take the cup of wine, then they'll pour it into a little cup, and they'll drink a little bit of wine in front of everybody. They have to show off that they're machmer against the minig ha'olam, that they're machmer over here. Okay. But the whole kasha of the Pnei Yeshua was only on the Birchas Erisin, on the Birchas Nisuin, there was never a problem. Some of the rabbis today don't even realize that there never was a problem on Birchas Nisuin. So they'll do the same by the Birchas Nisuin. By the second set of brachas also, they'll make a big scene and they'll take a sip of the wine. There is a volume of Shalas HaTshuvas by Rabbi Yossel Slutsker, who had smicha from the Volozhin Yeshiva. He was a rabbi in Slutsk. He was known as a holy tzaddik. It's interesting, he lived in the early 1800s. Yeshiva, Volozhin Yeshiva was founded in 1801. He was one of the earliest alumni. He was a member of the board. The board of directors of Volozhin consisted of Musmochim, big prominent rabbonim. And we never had the big issues in the yeshiva, whether Rab Chaim Soloveitchik was worthy of getting a shiur or not, or who should be the Rosh Yeshiva and Volozhin, whether the Beis Halevi or the Netziv. So the members of the board would gather together, all big rabbonim, goyim, adirim, and they would have a decision with Koivid Rosh. Rab Yossel Lutzke was a member of the board of Volozhin Yeshiva. He was involved in several of the major Dinei Torah that took place at Volozhin. See, he wrote a collection of Shadas HaTshuvas. It was a long time ago, 150 years ago, which was never printed until recently. For every generation after generation, something always came up and they were never able to print it. Finally, Machon Yerushalayim printed it. So he has very beautiful tshuvas. So one of his tshuvas is about this topic. How come the practice is that the Rabbonim don't drink the wine? After all, the Pnei Yeshua says that it's not right. So he writes back to the one who asked him, I beg your pardon, Pnei Yeshua didn't say it's not right. Pnei Yeshua asked Akasha, how come the rabbi doesn't drink the wine? And the teretz to the kasha is that once the Gaonim introduced that Birchas Erisin should be recited over a cup of wine, so it became the same as Kiddush, and the kasha is Nishkin Kasha, and you don't have to worry about it, the practice is okay. So that's what most have the practice, that the rabbi does not take a sip of the wine. Rav Soloveitchik did not sip the wine, and Rav Velbel Soloveitchik, the son of Rav Chaim, also did not sip the wine. And he asked him why. He says, I never noticed my father taking a sip of the wine. Rav Simcha Zelig also says, I never noticed Rab Chaim, but Rab Chaim told me privately that he always does it. He did it in such an inconspicuous fashion, no one should see. So his own son, Rav Velbel Soloveitchik, never saw his father do it. So he never took a sip of the wine either. The Rambam writes that the Kala should, the proper practice is, the Kala should go to mikveh before the wedding. It's a question, is this a din min HaTorah, is this a din min HaRabbanan? Some say it's only gzeira min HaRabbanan, that the chosen may touch the kala's hand when he puts the ring on her hand. Others say that it's more serious, it may even be a din d'araisa, that it's an isa to be mekadesh, a woman who didn't go to mikveh. The question is, if the kala was not able to go to mikveh beforehand, so what do you do? What, does the chosen put the ring on the girl's finger? He may touch her finger. So some had a practice that the kala wears gloves. So even if he puts it on a finger, he's not touching a finger. Rav Soloveitchik had a practice. I don't think any of his students follow this one. That the kala wasn't able to go to mikveh, so he would tell the kala to stretch out the palm of her hand, and instead of the chosen putting the ring on her finger, he would drop the ring into her hand. I remember I was once an aid kiddushin at such a wedding. Rav Soloveitchik used to be very absent-minded. So he would scream things out loud and wouldn't realize he's supposed to say it, he's supposed to whisper. He didn't realize he was speaking out loud. So he screams into the loudspeaker, well, Akala, please stretch out the palm of her right hand. And the kala started to cry under the chuppah. The whole world has to know. So I felt so pained, so I started to turn away. So then Rabbi Soloveitchik screams into the loudspeaker, "Will he aid them? Please pay attention." So that's not the common practice. We usually don't have the kala wear gloves, and we don't have the kala stretch out the palm of our hand. You tell a chassan, you should be careful not to touch the girl's hand when he puts on the ring. The Gemara has a din that when you go shopping in the store and you buy your Cheerios with milk, whatever, you don't have to have witnesses watching when you purchase the merchandise. When you buy real estate, when you buy an automobile, whether you buy metaltelem or karka, we learned this morning in the Daf Yomi, differences between buying metaltelem and karka, real estate, as opposed to movable items, but neither requires edim to watch. And by kiddushin, the Gemara says you have to have two kosher witnesses watching when the chassan gives the ring. I remember on one occasion, my wife wasn't home in the morning, and I was home preparing a shir, and then the doorbell rang, and it's the local Jewish prostitute from down the block, from the corner. She used to be an Esh Zishnach also. And so she rings the doorbell. I didn't want to let her in the house. I walked out into the hallway. I said, "What can I do for you?" So she tells me that we had a student in the yeshiva, Ambush. Mr. Ambush was a Baal Tshuva. He was from Colorado. Ambush is a Rosh Yitev Zan Imam in Bamura Shlema. I think he adopted the name when he became a Baal Tshuva. And Ambush was an older man. He was in his 50s. So he was studying in JSS, and he was mishadach his daughter with one of his classmates in the yeshiva. So Mr. Ambush told this local prostitute that she should ask Rabbi Shechter, the shayla, very serious shayla, as was, that there's someone getting married tonight, a Jewish man getting married tonight, and she doesn't want him to violate, the Cherem de Rabbeinu Gershom. He's married to her. So what should she do? She doesn't want him to violate the Issa. So I said, "What do you mean he's married to you?" So she says, "Yeah, when he came for her services, so he paid her money in advance, and he said, hurry up, mukudeshesli. He doesn't want to sit. He paid her money and said, hurry up, mukudeshesli." So she said, he's married to her. And tonight he's getting married, a chuppah v'kedushin with someone else. It's a cherem de Rabbeinu Gershom. She's very worried about the cherem de Rabbeinu Gershom. So I asked her, "Was anybody watching when he gave you the money? Was anybody there?" She says, "Yeah, her girlfriend, two girlfriends were there. Two other women were there." I said, "Were any men there?" So she says, "No." So I said, "There's no cherem de Rabbeinu Gershom." The kiddushin are only valid, even though he says and she says they both agree that he gave the ring, the shame kiddushin. But the Gemara says if he didn't have witnesses, two kosher witnesses watching, when the ring is given over to the kala, so the kiddushin doesn't take effect. So Tosfos is bothered with a kasha. There is a Mishnah in Makkos. Everybody knows a Mishnah in Makkos that if three or more witnesses come into Bezdin, and one of them is a Korev, or one of them is a Ganav, one of them is Posel Eidus for some reason or another, and they all testify, so the Bezdin can't even accept the testimony of the two kosher witnesses because they came together with a Posel witness. That's Nimtzach and Me'edim, Korev Posel. So Tosfos says, bother with the Kasha at every Chuppah. You have all the relatives are standing around. You have the two fathers are there, and then you have all the cousins. Everybody's standing around. Sometimes you have Ganavim also in the crowd. So how is the Eidus good? How is the Eidus good that you have two Kasher Eidim watching the Kiddushin, but you have Posel Eidim watching as well? So Taisa says it's not a Kasha. The whole din of Korba Posel only applies if they came and they testified in court. Nobody testified over here. This is only Eid Haroah. They're only watching. The only time we apply that rule of Nimtzach and Me'edim Karva Posel, if you have an Eid Hamed, if three or more people testified in court, and they gave a Haggadah Seidus, and one of them is a relative, and one of them is a dishonest in business, so the whole Eidus is no good. That's what Tosfos says. The Ritva is not satisfied with Tosfos' answer. He says the reason why Tosfos distinguishes between Eid Hamed, one who actually came to testify, as opposed to only Eid Haroi, one who's watching, is because the Gemara says it only applies when they accomplish something. So if they're testifying about an accident, or testifying about a murder, about a loan, or about payment of a loan, or damages, or something, so they only accomplish something with their testimony if they testify in court. But here by the chuppah, they accomplish by just watching. By watching alone, it's considered mekayim adover kasam adam. It's already lekiyam adover. So we should apply korav apostle to every chuppah. Every chuppah should be apostle. So the Ritva says that his rabbeim introduced the chumrah that you miyachad edim. What does it mean you miyachad edim? So you tell the two kosher edim, they should have in mind that we don't want to be mitztarif with everybody else. And the Gemara says, if they have this in mind, so the whole din of korav apostle doesn't apply. So that's what Rabbi Soloveitchik used to have such a lashon, that the Edom are excluding themselves, the two kosher Edom are excluding themselves from joining together with all the other Edom. I think Rabbi Soloveitchik, when he formulated this English text, didn't speak English like an American. He was he was a foreigner. As he spoke English in the later years, so he touched up his English. So he spoke English like an American. When he first came to America, he spoke like a foreigner. So he said that we're designating these witnesses to the exclusion of all others. What do I mean to the exclusion of all others? We two witnesses are excluding ourselves from the others. We don't want to join with the other Edom. The other Edom are still there. We're not excluding all the others. The kosher Edom are excluding themselves not to be mitzarf with the pasala Edom. The Tzais HaChoshen in his commentary on Choshen Mishpat points out that even though the Mishnah says that an ohev and a soine are kosher leedus, let's say my best friend is going to tell a story in Bezin that someone borrowed money from me. So we're not choshed that he's telling a lie because he's my dear friend. Ohev is kosher leedus, or a soine, let's say my big enemy is going to testify that I owe money to someone else. So we're not choshed that the soine is going to tell a lie. So nonetheless, the Maharshal has a comment on a Tosfos that what if he's an ohev gomer or a soine gomer, he really is out to kill me. Or he loves me very much, so maybe Oyev Gomer, Soine Gomer, maybe they are Posoleidus. Even though we paskin usually Oyev and Soine are Kosholeidus, maybe Oyev Gomer is Posol. So that's why the Tzais HaChoshen recommends that by the Chuppah, you should not have the very best friend of the Chosin serve as one of the Edi Kedushin. You should have someone and not that friendly with the Chosin. You have the very best friend, so that's an Oyev Gomer. So an Oyev Gomer, there is this opinion of the Maharshal, he reads it into a Tosfos, that the Oyev Gomer is really Posoleidus. So we've succeeded so far in choosing a Masada Kedushin, and the Chosin gave a ring, he didn't give a shtar, and he said Hariat Mukadeshis before he gave the ring, and we had Edom, and Edom have to be kosher leedus. Yeah. Kroivim, how far? Everybody's Kroivim, I'm sure. If we'll sit and calculate, I'm sure I'm related to everybody here in the room. So there's a limit how far the Kroivim goes. So the Chumrah, they have a Chumrah in Shulchan Aruch, you shouldn't even have Revi B'Revi with two Balki Yishtoids. Revi B'Revi with two Balkirs, a lot of times they don't even know each other. Revi, Birvi means that they're third cousins. Two girls are third cousins, and they're both married. That's twice Balki Ishtar. So that's a Chumra. You should try to avoid whenever possible. If they're the only religious people there, so you have them as the Edom. But if you have other religious people there, so you shouldn't have, up until Revi, Birvi, two brothers are called Rishon, Berishon, first cousins are called Sheni, Besheni, Shlishi, Bishlishi are second cousins, and third cousins are called Revi, Birvi. I remember once at a wedding, as they were calling up the two when I first got married, so I remembered my wife's side of the family. Now I don't remember any how I'm related to the other fellow, but I remember at one wedding they called me up together with a fellow Lieberman from Chicago. And as I was walking up to the chuppah, Lieberman married a Baron Soloveitchik's niece. As I was walking up, so I made the calculation that we are Revi B'Revi with two Balki Yishtas. But the Masada Kedushim is Rabbi Soloveitchik, so I wasn't going to tell him because he would have a good laugh. Because this chumrah doesn't really make any sense. But we try to avoid that. You shouldn't have even distant relatives serve as Edom at a wedding. Okay, so the couple has Erisin. Now we want to do a Nisuin. We want to complete the marriage. The Arusa is an Eishes Ish, lo bebeis habal, and the Nesua is considered Ishtoi Eishes Ish bebeis habal. When it says Chumish Beiso Zuishto, that's referring to a wife who's a Nesua. How exactly does one accomplish Nisuin? So the different opinions, and we try to satisfy all the various opinions. So one view is that the Badekin is the Nisuin. When the Chosin covers over the Kala's face with the veil, that constitutes the Nisuin. Even though we do the Badekan before the Kiddushin, so the Mishlam Melech has a whole explanation that that is possible. If you do the Nisuin prior to the Erisin, it's also acceptable. He quotes a Tshuva from Rashi that it's okay. The Nari Bihud in his comments on the side of the Shulchan Aruch called the Dogam Lavava points out that in many parts of the world, the practice was that the Chosin did not do the Badekan at all. The Rabbanim would go to the Badekan. The Chosin would stay behind by the Chosin's Tish. And the Rabbanim would go to do the Badekan. So the Nari Bihuda says that it's understood that the Chosin is appointing the Rabbanim as a Shliach to do the Badekan on his behalf. So Rabbi Soloveitchik was not happy with that idea. He had a whole comment on a Tosfos in Kiddushin that you cannot appoint a Shliach for Nisuin. You can only appoint a Shliach for Erisin. You cannot appoint a Shliach for Nisuin. And he has a whole essay about this when he delivered the hesped when his uncle Rav Velvel Soloveitchik passed away. So there's a long footnote in the middle of the hesped about that topic, that the possibility that he cannot appoint a shliach. So he would always be very touchy about this. Usually, when the chassan goes to do the badekan, so he doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't know how many veils there are. So usually, the kala's mother helps out the chassan do the badekan. So he would always tell the Kala, don't help out the Chassan, he has to do it all by himself. There's no shlichas. He can't appoint the shliach, and the Chassan has to do the Badekan all by himself. Okay? So one opinion is that the Badekan is the Nisuin. The common opinion is that we assume standing under the canopy constitutes the Nisuin. Why is the canopy of love constitute the Nisuin? What is that all about? So there are two versions of what this is all about. So one version that's printed on the bottom of the page in the big Shulchan Aruch, in the Eizah Mikodesh, that's one of the commentaries from the B'chotcher Rav, he says that the chuppah should be constructed, the four poles should be constructed in such a way, like an Erev, for Shabbos purposes, at Tzuras HaPesach. So you have four different walls, and it's considered a cheder miyuchad, even though everybody's looking in, everybody sees what's happening, and the chassan had the kala come into his private room. This is Hachnasa Levshusa. That's why many pointed out that years ago it was a common practice to use a pareches. For many years it was a common practice to use a pareches of the Aron Kodesh for the chuppah. So the many pareches in had were made from cloth. Then they would have four metal rings in the four corners. They would hold up the poles by the four rings. When you make an erev for Shabbos purposes, you have to have kona mikam, kona mikam. You have to have kona al gabeyam. If you have a string tied to the side and tied to the side over here, it's no good. It has to be on top. So the way they used to have, traditionally, they used to have the rings on the four corners of the pareches and the poles. So there was nothing going from the top of one pole to the other. The edge of the cloth would be a half an inch away or an inch away from the edge of the poles on top. So that's why many rabbanim said that that's not proper. And what you look in a lot of the old pareches that they have from Europe, said they would have four diagonal slits in the four corners of the pareches that would put the poles under the cloth of the parech, so the cloth itself went from on top of one pole to the other. I remember many years ago there was a display in the Yeshiva Museum that used to be on the campus in Washington Heights. Haven't visited the museum, it moved to a new location. I haven't visited it since they moved to the new location. So I remember once there was a display of old pareches from Bati Knesias in Europe, and quite a few of them had slits in the four corners. So the one who was giving us the tour, the woman who gave us the tour asked, does anybody know why it has a slit in the four corners? None of us knew. So they explained that the poskim say it should be like a Tzuras HaPesach, has to be. Then we looked it up, that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. So that's one understanding. Others say that that's not at all what it's based on. It's not based on the idea of a Tzuras HaPesach. It's rather the poskim in Megillas Rus describes marriage, the farasta kanafecho ala masecho, that by Svardim and by Yekis. And apparently years ago that was a very common practice. The chosin, like badekan, the chosin would put they would put a talus over the chosin kala together, or the badekan, the chosin puts something over the kala's head. So the ikar of the chuppah really is the cloth on top. Sometimes you go to a wedding and there is no cloth on top. It's plastic or it's wood on top. So that's questionable. Is the chuppah supposed to represent four Tzuras HaPesach, a separate room, Hachnasa Levshuso, or is it supposed to be really a Farasta Kanafecha Ala Masecha? So years ago, they didn't schedule weddings months in advance. They didn't have to book a hall. They didn't have to book an orchestra. They didn't have people flying in from New Zealand and from South Africa. So the Kala went to mikveh, and next week they would have the chasen, right? So they'd always be able to put, the Kala went to mikveh, so they'd be able to put the talis over the chasen Kala. Today they make arrangements a half a year in advance, and the Kala can't always go to mikveh in advance. So you can't put a talis over the chasen Kala, they're standing under the chuppah together. So that's why they changed it. Instead of having the talis over both of them, so they have the cloth on top, but the cloth on top is supposed to represent the furasta kanafech ala masechem. So these are the two versions of why standing under the chuppah constitutes the nisuin. Either that the four poles are constructed in such a way with the cloth on top that it should constitute an erev, so to speak, hachnasa l'vshuso, or because the cloth on top is the key, the cloth on top is a furasta kanafech ala masechem. And then the third, or the fourth opinion, first opinion is that the badekan is nisun. Second opinion, standing under the canopy is the nisun. Two variations of why. Third opinion is the Rambam's opinion. Rambam holds that this canopy of love, Baba Mises, the badekan is nothing. And the Rambam's opinion is that the yichud, they have to go to the yichud room right after the birchas nisun. So that's why we have the yichud afterwards. In fact, the Mogen Avraham in his commentary on Shulchan Aruch quotes from Rabbi Elie Mizrahi, the tshuvas of Rabbi Elie Mizrahi, that the proper practice is not to dilly-dally after the chuppah on the way to the yichud room. They should go quickly, so the brachas recited under the chuppah should be over lasiyosim, should be immediately before they go to the yichud room. The Maharil has this as well. Maharil writes, umiritzem esachosim esakala d'cheir ha-yichud. You should rush the chosim kala to the yichud room, not to pause in between the birchas nisuin and the yichud. Usually now the chassanim don't know, so they spend 45 minutes after the chuppah is over till you have to kiss everybody, you have to kiss their mothers and their fathers, and everybody wish mazel tov. It's a long hapsoke, and then the boys are dancing and singing and songs with music. It takes a long time. More correct is that they should rush to the yichud room. I don't know if it means literally to run to the yichud room. Umiritzim esachos. I remember one year we were learning these dinim, so one of the boys got married that June. So right after the chuppah was over, he grabbed the kallah and then they ran. Ran to the yichud room. No one knew what hit him. It says, Maritzim, you have to run to the yichud room. And then the fourth opinion is, the Vilna Gaon's opinion, and Chacham Avadya says that that's the practice by his constituency, that none of the above are the nisun. Nisun is when they go home later on. That's Achnasa L'shusim. They go home after the dinner is all over, after the benching. Then Chacham Avadya gets stuck a little bit. So how you talk and you say the brachas under the chuppah, then it's going to take 7 hours till you're going to get home. Isn't that an issue of over the over? So he fudges a little bit on that, but that's their practice. They don't follow, they don't care. Badekin is a minig, the canopy of love is a minig, the yichud they won't do. They won't do the yichud, because if they do the yichud, the Rambam says the yichud is the nisuin. The Rambam is asvardi, so they know what the Rambam says. So they dafke don't do yichud till after the whole benching is all over. Does one require, we said, eidim are necessary when you give the ring to the kala, when the girl becomes mikudeshes? Is it necessary to have eidim watching when you do the nisuin? Do you have to have eidim when you do the badekin? Do you have to have eidim when you do the yichud? So that is a question. So the Beit Yaakov's used to insist that you have to have eidim yichud. In fact, there used to be Rabbi Pekarsky, who passed away, used to be in Queens, used to give the smicha to the Lubavitcher Talmidim. He himself learned in Lublin Yeshiva, I think. So he, on one occasion, we were sitting together and talking, so he said when he first came to America, he attended a wedding, and Rabbi Soloveitchik was Masada Kedushin. So under the chuppah, they announced who the Eidei Yichud are going to be. So he walked over to Rabbi Soloveitchik right after the chuppah, and he said, what is this? What are you announcing who the Eidei Yichud were? You don't need Eidei Yichud. Rabbi Soloveitchik says, it says on Shulchan Aruch that you need Eidim by the Yichud. So he said to him, it doesn't say anywhere in Shulchan Aruch. He had a photographic memory. He said, it doesn't say anywhere in Shulchan Aruch. So he said, no, it says in Shulchan Aruch. So he said, the next day he got a phone call. Rabbi Soloveitchik, he had just arrived in America. Rabbi Soloveitchik never heard of him. Next day gets a phone call from Rabbi Soloveitchik. Hello, is this Rabbi Petrikovsky? He didn't know his name. His name is Pekarsky. Hello, is this Rabbi Petrikovsky? Is Dr. Pekarsky? Yeah, okay. I stayed up all night. I couldn't find it in Shulchan Aruch. You're right. It doesn't say. But it's my family tradition that we always have Eidim by the Yichud. So from now on, I'm going to make a compromise. We're going to have the Edim, but he's not going to announce it under the chuppah. Okay. So that's a compromise. That's called a compromise. He follows his family tradition, but they don't announce under the chuppah. We have a practice that we insist on giving over the ksuba to the Kala before the Nisuin, because the Gemara says a man is not permitted to live with his wife, to have marital relations, if she doesn't have the document of the Ksuba available. And the Rambam understands in the Gemara, that's only a Din Midrabbon, it's not a Din Minatar. And the Rambam understood in the Gemara that it's improper to do the Chuppah in such a way that they're not allowed to live together. So just like the girl has to go to Mikveh before she has the Chuppah, that's Minatora, she's not allowed to live with her husband, so you have to give over the ksuba as well before you do the chuppah. So because our practice is that we're going to give over the ksuba to the kala before we start the chuppah, so that's why the Rabbi Natam introduced the custom that we have somebody read the ksuba in between the erisin and the nisum. What is that all about? In the days of the Tanakh, in the days of the Gemara, there was a long pause in between the Eris and Nisun. There would be a year pause in between, or 6 months in between. The Gaonim changed it, and they introduced that we have the Chuppah immediately following the Kiddushin. So the question was, what are you saying, Bar Piagofen, the second time? You just said Bar Piagofen 2 minutes ago. And they just drank the wine, and you fill up another cup, you say, Vaita Bar Piagofen. You just said Bar Piagofen before. So in order that it should look better, so they introduced the Kriyas HaKsuba to have a Hafsoka. That's why if the rabbi wants to hold a drasha, that's the best place to have a drasha. If you want to have a chazan sing something, the best time to have the chazan sing something is then. The whole reading of the ksuba was introduced in order to have a hafsoke that it should look better. Strictly speaking, it's not a problem because it's a separate case of nisuin. But it looks funny. So the Rabbi Natam introduced that you should read the ksuba in between. Many rabbis have the practice that they read the ksuba very quickly. So that's not correct. The whole idea of reading the ksuba is to waste a little time, to dilly-dally. So you have to have a slow reading of the ksuba. I remember years ago, some of you will remember Ablaza Shilva from Shinshineti. When he would read the ksuba, he would have a dramatic presentation. He would read very slowly. And when he saw that people are talking, so he would stop till everybody would be quiet. Then he would start all over again from the beginning. Because the whole purpose of the Kriyas HaKsuba is to waste time. So he would make sure that he would waste time. Okay, so more or less we covered most of the halachas in connection with the marriage ceremony. Now we'll run through some of the minhagim. In the closing pasuk in Parshas Toldos, we read that Esav heard that the parents wanted very much that Yaakov should marry someone from the family. So he went and he married Machlas Bas Yishmael. So this is my Chumash. So in my Chumash there has Masorah on the bottom of the page. So they write, there are different Masorahs regarding the pronunciation of the name Machalas. Is it Mochalas or Machalas? So they quote from the Maharil Diskin that the Medrash seems to have two traditions about this. One version has it that this wife was a Marshas, and he married this Marshas Al Nashav Lo Lisha. The original wives were also wicked, evil women, and he married another Marshas. He married another Marshas. So they apparently had the Nusach and Chumash Machalas, Milosh and Machla. Nocha Machla, he married another Machla. And the other, the Talmud Yerushalmi, apparently had the Masor that the correct pronunciation of the name was Mochalas, Losh and Mechila. That when there are three people who get a Mechila Savainas, and one of them is a Chosin who gets married. Chosin Kala get married, so they get a Mechila Savainas. So yesterday the Balkari leaned it twice. He leaned it once for Shvi, then he leaned it again for Mafter. So once he leaned Mochalas and once he leaned Machalas. That's a suggestion of the Maril Diskin. He's saying it twice anyway, once for Shvi, once for Mafter. So he may as well satisfy the both opinions in the Medrash. So it's based on that passage in the Talmud Yerushalmi, when a couple gets married, they're given a Mechila Savon. It means if they do Tshuva. If they don't do Tshuva, they don't get a Mechila Savon. We never get a Mechila Savon without Tshuva. So that's why the minig developed that the chasen kala should fast if they're up to it. If they're up to it, many of you will remember Rabbi David Lipschitz always would come to a chasen. So the first question when he asked would be, did the kala have something to eat? He was afraid the kala is going to faint under the chuppah. I was at a wedding where the chasen fainted under the chuppah. happens to be one of the big prominent Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael today. A big Rosh Hashiva, very successful. He fainted under the chuppah. He wasn't up to fasting a whole day. So we have the minig. This is a very old minig. It's a very old minig. It's older than the minig not to fast in the Chodesh Nissen. So they say if a chassan gets married in Chodesh Nissen, he should fast because the minig that the chassan fasted the day of the chuppah preceded the minig not to fast in the Chodesh Nissen. That's a pretty old minig. So the minig is if they're up to it, the chassan kala should fast. And the minig is that when they daven mincha, they say vidui. And then you have the minig that the chassan wears a kittel, like on Yom Kippur, to represent the big day lovin of the Kohen Gadol, that you get the mechilas avonos. We just read a few weeks ago, Parshas Lech Lecha, Kodesh Baruch Hu tells Avraham Avinu he's inside his tent, and Kodesh Baruch Hu says, Vayotze osa achutza, he takes him outside and he says, Svara kachavim, and it's nighttime, he says, look at the stars, count the stars, and tuchalis b'ko yezarecha. So when a young girl is getting married, and we hope and pray she should have a lot of children, so the minig is that you walk outside, and you have the chuppah tachas kippus harakia, to invoke this blessing. If a woman is remarrying at the age of 75, so then she's not interested in having any more babies, so you can get married inside the house. Some interpret that this minig already existed in days of the Talmud Yerushalmi, that the young girls would get married tachas kippus harakia, to invoke the blessing of Avraham Avinu ko yezarecha, and the older women who were getting married the second time would get married inside the house, because the Yerushalmi makes a distinction and says that the chuppah only is a valid chuppah if the girl is getting married for the first time. If the girl is an almana, she's getting married for the second time, then the chuppah is not kainah. Chuppah doesn't constitute the nisuin, and some interpreted that that's the reason why, that the chuppah of the almana would be outside, and it would be inside the house, and the chuppah of the girl who's getting married for the first time would be outside, so only when it's outside is it a good chuppah, and they have a whole explanation. Why? Why should it make a difference outside or inside?
Pardon, Rabbi, you said that getting married under the stars was very late, and you're saying that this blessing to getting married under the stars was actually during the times of the Gemara.
Some claim that this practice was existed in the days of the Talmud Yerushalmi, correct, to get married under the stars.
Rabbi in Constantinople, who when he arrived and saw people getting married...
No. In the daytime, the stars are there too. No. Stars are there, yeah. The people ask, that's a good question. We assume the stars are hiding in the daytime. We don't see them, but they're all there. They're all there, yes. Yes. There is a passage in the Medrash that a chassan is daimel a melech, and this is quoted in Shulchan Aruch. So with respect to what do we say the chassan is daimel a melech? So once there was a young boy who was getting married. He wasn't a student in Yeshiva. His father was a Rebbe in Yeshiva. He himself was learning at Chaim Berlin. And he came with his father to invite Rabbi Soloveitchik to come to the wedding. Rabbi Soloveitchik was already old, and he was going to get married on a Sunday. Rabbi Soloveitchik would be a big tircha. He used to come in on Tuesday, and he went home on Thursday. So he apologized. He can't come in for his wedding. So he asked him, what should I be careful about at the wedding? He doesn't know. He told me he doesn't know why he asked. He said, what should I be careful about? Rabbi Soloveitchik saw he was a yeshivish tip. So he said, I see you wear a hat. You should wear the hat the whole time. Shouldn't take off your jacket, you shouldn't take off your hat, because Chassan Daim al HaMelech and the king is not allowed to appear in public. Shivas Me'am Mishti, Chassan Daim al HaMelech, is not allowed to appear in public without the big day Malchus and without the crown. The Rambam says the king always has to appear in public dressed up like this. If the person never wears a hat, he's talking about a person who did wear a hat. Dr. Rieger was all upset. He came to yeshiva once in September. His son married a girl from Boston. So Rav Soloveitchik was Masada Kedushin because the wedding was in Boston. His son never learned by the road, but Rav Soloveitchik was Masada Kedushin. So the son came in a yarmulke. He wasn't wearing a hat. Rav Soloveitchik said, it can't be Masada Kedushin. Rav Simcha Zelig's grandson. Rav Simcha Zelig was the diamond. It can't be Masada Kedushin. You have to get a hat. So somebody got him a straw hat that fit. No, it has to be a felt hat. You can't have him. Rav Simcha Zelig's grandson going to wear a straw hat. He insisted it has to be a felt hat. So Professor Rieger came to the yeshiva in September. He was so upset. He said, what do you mean? My father was Masada Kedushin with people who were wearing yarmulkes also. Yeah, but those people weren't Rav Simcha Zelig's grandchildren. So Rav Soloveitchik felt from that family, the proper thing is Chassan Daim al Malach. He should be dressed like Malchus, with a crown, with a jacket, and so on. We have a din that Many say chazan daimel amelach, so just like you have to stand out of respect for the king, so too you have to stand out of respect for the chazan. So Rav Soloveitchik always used to say that's after the chuppah, the chazan is daimel amelach. When he's marching to the chuppah, he's not yet daimel amelach. So after the chuppah, he's daimel amelach, everybody should stand up. But many had the practice to stand up as the chazan kala marching down to the chuppah. So what is that based on? So he would quote some earlier sources, I think it says in Rekeach like that, in Rishonim, that that's based on a different thing, that the Mishnah says in Bikurim that when the farmers would be bringing the Bikurim to the Beis HaMikdash, so everybody would stand out of respect for the Mevi'ei Bikurim. When a person is on his way to perform a mitzvah, so everybody has to stand out of respect. So here the Chosin is on his way to perform the mitzvah of getting married. That's what Rav Soloveitchik said. That's why the minig is, those who had the minig is to stand up, he's on his way to perform a mitzvah. There are three different minhagim, whether the kala marches around the chosin or not. Some have the practice, the kala marches, it's not a din, it's all a minig. Some have the practice, she marches around seven times, because the pasuk says, in Koheles Havel, Havalem Hamar, Koheles Havel, Havalem Hakol Hevel. So the word Hevel appears seven times. And the chosin should realize, the kala is such a beautiful girl and such a beautiful gown and so much money is being poured out on this chasen, and he should realize that everything is havel havel. That's why she watches around seven times to remind him, hakol havel, everything is hevel. We should look for ruchnias. Others have the practice that you only march around three times based on the Mishnah, the opening line in the Mishnah in Kiddushin, which doesn't mean this, that hoisha niknes b'sholos drachim. You kind of the girl by walking around three times. That's not what it means in the Mishnah, but there was such a minig. There was such a minig. I remember once I was at a wedding, there was a dispute between the chasen side and the kala side whether they should march around. So I said, well, maybe make a compromise and march around three times. So they both agreed. I said, there is such a minig to march around three times. So they both agreed. They were both happy. But these are all minhagim. Which direction one should face? So there are six different minhagim. Whether the chasen kala should face northeast, south, or west, or whether they should dafke have their backs to the audience. That's how the Kolbo writes like that, because you shouldn't be Mekadosh B'shuk. The Gemara says if you marry a girl B'shuk in public, that's Pritzis, you should marry privately. So if you have it back to the audience, and only the Edom, only the rabbi sees, so that's privacy. And Rabbi Hutner introduced a new minhag, that by the Catholics, the minister is actually performing the marriage. By us, the rabbi doesn't perform the marriage. The rabbi is mesada the kiddushin. The chasen performs the marriage. So the performers in a play always face the audience. So Rabbi Hutton wanted to emphasize that unlike by the Catholics, that the minister performs the marriage, by us, the chasen is the performer. So the chasen should face the audience. So you have six different minhagim, northeast, southwest, back to the audience, or facing the audience. Rabbi Soloveitchik always used to have the chasen kala face mizrach. That was his practice. One of the participants in the Tuesday night Shia told me that he once attended a wedding. He attended two weddings, 3 weeks apart, in the same wedding hall. So Rabbi Soloveitchik was there. He had Rabbi Soloveitchik was a Masada Kiddushin. So he had to face Mizrach. And then 3 weeks later, Rabbi Soloveitchik was there with Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. So Rabbi Soloveitchik led Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. He was older. So he had him be Masada Kiddushin. So he had to face a different direction. So this Talmud Chacham asked the Rav after the wedding, 3 weeks ago you were Masada Kiddushin, you had them face in this direction. And tonight Rav Moshe Feinstein had them face the other direction, which is the correct way. So Rav Soloveitchik didn't want to get involved, and so he said what Rav Moshe Feinstein did was correct. They're all correct. Whatever you do is correct. There's six different minhagim. But that was his practice. He would have them face, Chosin Kala should face Mizrach. Everybody knows that the kala has to stand to the right of the chosin. If the rabbi makes a mistake and he doesn't have the kala stand to the right of the chosin, they'll revoke his smicha. That's the end of the world. That nitzvah shegel minecha, the kala has to stand to the right of the chosin. Even though the Arizal questions, it says after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, sheishiv ocho yemino, maybe the right hand became the left hand, maybe the kala should stand to the left of the chosin, but that's yohark bal yavah, that's out of the question. Everybody knows kala has to stand to the right of the chosin. Bali HaTosfos record a minig that after the chuppah, when the chosin kala would go to the yichud or whatever, so the chosin should either grab the kala's hand or grab the kala's arm, as it says in the pasuk, ki yikach ish isha. That's not what it means, but that was the meaning that Kiikach Ishisha, the chosen should grab. Of course, if she went to the mikveh, she didn't go to the mikveh, you can't grab her hand. Apparently, in post-war Europe, the literature Rashi Yeshiva were not so happy about this public display of affection towards the Kala, so they discouraged it. So there's a fellow Hamburger in Bnei Brak who published these four volumes of Shorish Minig Ashkenaz, and he documents all the old Minhagim, that the way the Yekkes do, that's the more correct way, always the correct way. So he quotes many sources on this. And he quotes, he documented that there was this was an old practice in the days of the Bali HaTesis, and it was the Lithuanian Rosh Yeshiva who did away with it in recent years. Some have a custom to insist the chassan should untie all of the knots on his tie and whatever. So one of the boys in the yeshiva asked Rabbi Soloveitchik, so he said, no, you don't have to do that. And he said, no, you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to do that. It's superstitious. And then the boy told the Rav that his mother-in-law, his very assistant, said, don't fight with your mother-in-law. Do whatever she wants, but keep in mind that it's absolutely meaningless, has no basis whatsoever. I remember when I got married, so my father-in-law had certain minhagim, and my family didn't have all of those minhagim. So I didn't want to observe all of my father-in-law's minhagim. So I asked Rabbi Soloveitchik before the wedding, when a couple gets married, we spoke the other day, the kala, the girl usually enters into the reshus of the husband, and she follows all the 3 hours, 6 hours, kidneys, whatever. The wife follows the customs of the husband. So maybe over here, shouldn't the wife follow the customs of the husband? So I shouldn't have to follow what my father-in-law said. So he said to me, Herschel, all of it hugging by the chasen is all for batchanis. Let them have a good life. It's all for the sake of batchanis. Everybody should have a good time. So let them have a good time. I remember when our daughter got married, we have 3 daughters who live in Eretz Yisrael, so one of them went Shana Aleph, Shana Bet, Shana Gimel, Shana Dal, Shana Hey. She never came back. She stayed in Eretz Yisrael. So when she got married, she went to Hebrew University, so they told him, no yeshiva bach is going to marry you, only from Merkaz Harav. So she married a boy from Merkaz Harav. So Rabbi Avram Shapiro was the Rosh Yeshiva, so he was Masada Kiddushin. So my daughter hadn't seen us for so many years. She was in Eretz Yisrael, although, yeah, we saw her a little bit here and there. But basically, we hadn't seen her for a few years. So she, just out of sentimental attachment, she wanted us to march it down the aisle. And the meaning in Yerushalayim is that the fathers march down the chosin and the mothers march down the kala. So we asked Rabbi Avram Shapiro, so he said he can't be Masada Kiddushin. If the parents are going to march down the kala, he can't violate the minig Yerushalayim, they'll have to have a different Masada Kiddushin. So we suffered along, and we did not march our daughter down to the chuppah. All the minhagim are beautiful. We have to observe, each machne should observe their minhagim. Everyone should have nachas from all of their children, marry them all off properly.